Anyway, well, that's a great segue to my talk. The substance and title changed slightly from what was published in the program, but this is a new title. It's a little bit more general, Assimilation and Health Among New York City Chinese Immigrants. And I'd like to thank Dr. Rowe and the audience for sort of bringing up some important questions on this topic, and I will try to get into some of those questions a little bit later. But I want to first begin my presentation with sort of contextualizing my research question within this broader topic of immigrant health and the immigrant initial quote unquote health advantage. Okay, so some of the leading themes in immigrant health today are is the idea that that immigrants are healthier when they come to the United States. And this idea has somewhat emerged from the concept of the Latino epidemiological paradox, and that epidemiological paradox emerged from data on Southwestern Latinos in the United States. It was popularized by a researcher out of UT Galveston called Dr. Marquidez. And he looked at the health profile of Southwestern Latinos in the United States, and he found a pattern that generally they had lower mortality or poor health outcomes relative to the whites, despite having an adverse socioeconomic profile. There were subsequent studies that emerged after Dr. Marquidez's work, and a lot of those studies also have sort of been consistent with that idea that immigrants in general have shown a mortality advantage relative to U.S. natives. So it's somewhat evolved into a broader idea that immigrants are generally healthier than the U.S. native population, but they're also a select group. So we need to think about that, right? So they're a select group. They're not necessarily representative of the people that they leave behind in their country of origin. Okay, so why are they a select group? They're migrants. They're coming here. They have a lot of barriers to overcome. And they're probably more motivated than the people that they leave behind. So the leading explanations for the health advantage are the selective, is the idea that they are select group, it's the selective migration. But also there's a question in the literature about whether maybe when they come here, their culture, their norms, the social norms that they bring with them are actually protective. So sort of these are the contested notions sort of explaining some of the advantage of immigrants in terms of their health outcomes in the United States. But what we also know, and as Dr. Rowe has sort of talked about, is that even though they come here with an advantage, over time, their health declines with greater exposure to the U.S. society. And I think, you know, as Dr. Rowe has mentioned, we have a lot of empirical evidence from a variety of health outcomes, but I think a lot of the stronger evidence comes from the work on BMI and obesity. And so, the most popular study that came out of that was a study published based on the National Health Interview Survey by Antico and Bedard that came out in, I think, early 2000, and they popularized this notion called unhealthy assimilation. And so what they found was basically, over time, when immigrants come here, their BMIs are generally lower than the native population, but over time, their BMIs actually converge to the U.S. standards. Okay, so the whole concept of unhealthy assimilation emerged out of that study based on the NHIS data. Okay, so that said, the main goal of my study is to examine whether assimilation, and I could define that later, but I think it's a multidimensional concept, whether assimilation is associated with an increased risk of both obesity and diabetes in Chinese immigrants living in New York City. Okay, so why focus on obesity and diabetes, and why focus on immigrants? Okay, so each year in the U.S., chronic illness causes 7 in 10 deaths and accounts for 75% of the U.S. healthcare spending. So we all know why it's important to focus on chronic disease. And just so you know, we currently spend $2.6 trillion. The size of our healthcare system is $2.6 trillion, which is comparable to the GDP of France. So we have a huge issue with our healthcare costs in the United States. Medical costs for diagnosed diabetes patients, for example, are about 2.3 times higher than those for people without diabetes. And immigrant groups have significant diabetes and obesity burden. We know that they're disproportionately represented. And then relative to natives, immigrants experience more rapid changes in exposure, and they're actually possibly more susceptible. There's emerging literature that suggests that Asians, for example, are at a greater risk at lower BMIs, greater risk for diabetes and other metabolic adverse health outcomes. So it's important to study immigrants sort of as a window to understanding the development of diabetes and chronic illness in general, I think. Okay, and so why are we focusing on Chinese immigrants? Okay, this is recent data for New York City, and we see that Chinese are actually the second largest immigrant group in New York City. This is based on 5-year 2010 American Community Survey data. And this represents the largest ethnic groups, immigrant groups in New York City. And I just wanted to sort of relate that to sort of the national picture. So Chinese represent the second largest immigrant group. And nationally, they also represent the second largest immigrant group. But you'll see that the immigrant group distribution is nationally a little bit different than New York City. Okay. So our study uses the 2009 New York City Chinese Health Assessment, and we call it the Cha-Cha study. It's a cross-sectional study of health behaviors, stress, socioeconomic status, CVD risk factors among Chinese immigrants living in New York City, and they range from 60 to 101 years of age. We had a total of about 2,070 males and females in our study, and participants underwent a physical examination, and it also provided a blood sample. Diabetes was defined or ascertained based on fasting glucose greater than 125 milligrams per deciliter, or self-report of the physician diagnosis. We used the WHO criteria for Asian populations to define obesity in terms of BMI. Obesity was defined as a BMI over or equal to 27. We also had dietary data based on a food frequency questionnaire adopted for Chinese populations, and we had data on physical activity from the Global Physical Activity Questionnaire. And that actually also included questions on occupational physical activity, which not many physical activity questionnaires do. Assimilation was operationalized with a number of years in the U.S. We included these covariates: age, sex, family history of diabetes, employment status, educational level, and insurance coverage. And all analysis was conducted in SAS 9.2. Okay, so I'm just going to present some descriptive data. And so, again, this is our primary explanatory variable here is duration in the U.S., years in the U.S., and we use these three groups, which are sort of comparable to Dr. Rose's study, less than or equal to 5 years, 6 to 15 years, and then over 15 years of age. And this just gives you a sense of what the mean age 5 years in the U.S. was, and we see that actually with each successive group, we have a slightly higher mean age, and that's actually significant. This slide shows us college education by years in the U.S., and we see that the immigrants that have actually lived here much longer, greater than 15 years, have actually much lower levels of education, which is, again, somewhat interesting. This is not having any insurance coverage by years in the U.S., and this sort of is, as expected, we see much lower percentage of respondents having no insurance among the group that has been in the U.S. much longer, among the group that's been here over 15 years. We have much higher rates in the earlier immigrant groups. Okay, and this is physical activity, all types, by years in the U.S., and this is overall physical activity in MESTMIN per week, and we see that this is actually significant, and you see slightly lower levels of physical activity in the group that has been here longest in the U.S., so in the group that's been here over 15 years. And here we see, again, it's just significant. This is just occupational or work physical activity. And we see a nice sort of graded decrease in physical activity by years in the U.S. Okay, so there seems to be some kind of association where the more time an immigrant spends here, the less physical activity they have. Okay, and so this slide shows us the total daily calories by years in the U.S. Again, this is based on data collected from the food frequency questionnaire. And we see that we don't really see such a pattern here, but there are, surprisingly, that we have actually lower total calories in the group that has been here longer, which I didn't expect. Okay, so I suspected that would be like physical activity. I suspected that that group would probably have higher total calories. Okay, and this is, again, this is all cross-sectional descriptive data. This is significant. We see increasing levels of obesity with increasing years in the U.S. And then with diabetes, we see also an increasing prevalence of diabetes with increasing years in the U.S. Again, this is all unadjusted data. And I want to, and preliminary analysis, and I want to just emphasize that after we've actually adjusted for all the covariates that I presented earlier, sex, age, education, employment size, and insurance coverage, none of those relationships remain. The only significant association that remains after adjustment for all the covariates are the results for obesity. Okay, and we see here this just reports the age-adjusted and the overall adjusted odds ratio for obesity and its relationship with years in the U.S. And we see that among the group that have been here for over 15 years, they have an elevated risk of being obese in comparison to those that have been here less than or equal to 5 years. Okay, and the relation among this middle category didn't was it retained, but we do see it in this this last category. Okay. So that's all. 2 minutes?
Yeah.
Okay. So just to sum up, the data suggests that we do have some support for this idea that there is unhealthy assimilation among immigrants with regard to obesity, but we didn't see it hold up for diabetes. Again, but the results for obesity are consistent with other studies, some of the studies that I discussed earlier. But the mechanisms are not clearly understood. We see, in the descriptive results, we do see a decline in physical activity with increasing duration in the U.S., but we didn't see that with diet. Another important area or variable that I'd like to look at is also stress and how that varies with increasing time in the U.S. as well, and I wonder if that's part of that mechanism. Some of the limitations that I want to discuss that I think are important in regard to this general field of immigrant health. I want to emphasize that we're looking at a cross-section of immigrants. So we're comparing, immigrants that have been here 15 years ago to immigrants that are just coming, like in the last 5 years. And that actually represent different migration cohorts. And with that said, the different migration cohorts may actually reflect variation in region of origin. 15 years ago, Chinese may be coming from different regions, more urban regions, maybe more rural regions. The ones coming now are from different provinces. We don't know what the differences are between those two groups. We actually can look at that in my data set, and I haven't done that yet. But that said, you need to understand that these are very different migration cohorts. We may not be capturing assimilation. You may be capturing heterogeneity in region of origin, heterogeneity in SES, socioeconomic status, and subsequently lifestyle. So we don't know that. And so with a cross-section of immigrants, we can't study the dynamic aspects of assimilation longitudinally. Surprisingly, in the field of immigrant health, although we have a lot of this literature, we don't have a study that has looked at a recent group of immigrants and followed them over time longitudinally to see how the dynamics of assimilation and acculturation change over change health behaviors and consequently health over time. So that's an important point. And you know, a colleague of mine here in the audience, Dr. Lucely Quaz, and I are trying to run a study that looks at Filipino immigrants here in the U.S. And we want to follow, compare them to their family members in the Philippines and look at them over time. So that's something that's a large limitation of the existing research. And again, so I didn't look at, I only looked at time in the U.S., but I didn't look at other indicators of cultural change or acculturation, like language preference and other things. The data set has that, I just didn't have time to look at that. Again, so the years in the U.S. may be an indicator of acculturation, but it also may, you know, again, it represents the cumulative exposure to new social, cultural, and physical environments. So they're undergoing cultural change, but they're also being exposed to a physical environment that's increasingly characterized in the U.S. as obesogenic. So we have to understand that there's an interaction between environment as well as their biology and sort of their own lifestyle. And I think also an important point here that is not really mentioned that much in the literature is that the findings on acculturation, assimilation, health, how can we sort of contextualize, interpreted in light of the westernization of lifestyles globally. So a lot of the immigrants coming today are coming from societies where they're undergoing the same trends of of westernization and sort of these changes in lifestyle. So how does that impact what we're seeing here in the United States? And so I think that's all I have. I just want to acknowledge my colleagues, Tushar Trivedi, he was my intern at Downstate, Ming Chen Ye, he's a nutritionist at Hunter College, and Judy Wiley Rosette, she's at Albert Einstein College of Medicine, and she's the PI of the study that was funded by the NHLBI. Thank you.
Thanks, Amy. We have time for two questions. Anybody different than before have questions? No? Yes, ma'am. Can you introduce yourself, please?
Yeah, my name is Neva, the first student in the public health evaluation in policy program at University of Minnesota. I was just wondering with the age groups or the duration groups that you had, is there any way to break it down the first category, especially with the 0 to 5 years? When I worked in refugee resettlement, a lot of times we would see significant weight gain in the first 6 months, and after that, I kind of took off. So I was just wondering, do you think there's any kind of turning in the first or the first duration where people gain weight and then, you know, realize what's going on, lose it, and that kind of messes with the average at all, or do you have any?
I didn't look at it. It's possible, but you know, I don't know what the sample size of that group is, but it could be possible that happens.
Anyone else?
Well, just a suggestion. I excluded the first 6 months from my survey, which is in a minute for other reasons, but you could do that. You could just exclude the first 6 months and see if your results change.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
No? Okay. Thanks, Amy.